Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of Oh Real Original. I'm Corey Dempsey.
And I'm Andrew Beam. Oh Real Original is a podcast where we explore the phenomenon of twin films, two movies with nearly identical premises, released within the same 12-month period.
And we're going to be exploring those films through the lens of a fight, boxing, MMA, whatever your violent sport of choice is. Two movies will enter the ring, but only one can emerge victorious. There will be no ties here.
That's right. There will be 5 rounds in this fight, and the judges will score each round out of 10. So the first round of the fight will be an analysis of the talent involved in each film. We'll discuss the directors, the actors, the writers, and ultimately decide on which film had the better credit sheet.
In the next 4 rounds, we'll hone in on similar plot points or storytelling tropes in each movie and do a deep dive into those scenes to discuss which one ultimately did it better. After all 5 rounds have been discussed, we'll be tallying up our scorecards and we will declare a winner.
And so like we have in all of our previous episodes, we are joined by a special guest who will help declare the superior movie.
And this week, our guest is the bassist in Shortwave Radio Band and the host of our fellow Metroland Network podcast, Unsigned 518. It's Andy Scullin, everybody. What's up, Andy?
What's going on? How are you?
Good.
I'm a little bummed you didn't throw in the Crystal Lake thing.
Ah, he is also the former camp counselor at Crystal Lake. Fun fact.
Yeah, like I was saying, I have toured the original Camp Crystal Lake.
Wait,
that's excellent.
Why? When? Jersey.
Well, a
couple
not
the
years
why.
Ago.
Definitely not the why.
Yeah, just because you could. They do. Can I start off with a ramble?
You may as well.
Absolutely.
Do.
Like they shot the original Friday the 13th at a Boy Scout camp. Mm-hmm. And it's been a working Boy Scout camp since like the 1920s, and is still currently a working Boy Scout camp, and
that
has
like
been continuously. So they waited until it closed for the summer, and then shot it there. So they realized, I don't know, probably 10 years ago, that they can make a boatload of money by charging people a couple $100 to go tour the original shooting location of Friday the 13th. So I did that, and
by
it was awesome.
By boatload, are they literally riding around with boats that have money on them?
Probably.
No, that's a terrible thing.
I mean, probably. the tour guides were fantastic, but like they don't, you know, you walk around the camp and yeah. You're like, oh, this is where this was shot. This is the, and then they would be like, go ahead and do whatever you want. So we'd run around and take pictures, and oh, it was awesome. I would do it 100 times.
It's fantastic, and that's why we have you on this episode.
That
because
was almost
you
the
are a
stop talking. That's fantastic.
That's why you are talking about Friday the 13th. So now that we've got all that out of the way, doubling as both a judge and the ring announcer is Andrew Beam to announce these two films that we're going to be discussing today.
Now, I would almost like to argue as I kind of do this that... Do people like this? Am I just doing this for your enjoyment, Corey, or?
Yes.
Oh. It's good. All right. Just going to stretch a little. Cool. Ladies and gentlemen. Sorry, I got like real close on there. My bad. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the only event of the evening sanctioned by absolutely no one. Our 3 judges scoring the contest this evening are Corey Dempsey, Andrew Beam, and Andy Scullin. There is no referee because... And now, for those in attendance and the 1 or 2 people listening around the Capital Region, ladies and gentlemen, this is the moment you've all been waiting for. Live, but not really at all because it's being recorded at the Jive Hive somewhere in Albany. It's time! 5 rounds for the best movie about monsters fighting each other, but sort of innocent people get caught in the middle. Introducing first, a film where a team of archaeologists, engineers, and some random people go spelunking to find a hidden pyramid, but eventually get fucked up by a bunch of extraterrestrials. Alien versus Predator! And their opponent. A film where Freddy Krueger brings Jason Voorhees to kill people so he can gain strength and power to do the same, but then the plan sort of backfires. Freddy versus Jason!
That might have been one of your best ones, yeah.
That actually, it felt good.
That was good. I had Alec, no idea this... that was coming. Like,
okay.
At all.
No, the position. The mic, I don't know.
It was all good.
Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, no, no. It was terrifying.
All right. So before we get to these rounds, I want to go through some facts and figures with you guys about these two movies and also the franchises at large, because we have four pretty big Hollywood properties here. We have the Friday the 13th franchise, we have the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, then we have the Alien franchise and the Predator franchise. They're coming together in a crossover movie trying to appeal to both audiences. And they did so by releasing these two films. So Freddy vs. Jason was released on August 15th, 2003 by New Line Cinema. That is the house that Freddy built. It was made on a budget of $30 million and made $116 million at the international box office. As a franchise as a whole, Friday the 13th has made 12 different films, grossing $908 million over the course of those 12 films. Nightmare on Elm Street is the third grossest highest grossing franchise, right behind Friday the 13th at $793.5 million, although it did so in only nine films. Any thoughts on who's first among those two?
As for, what do you mean first?
So Friday the 13th is the second highest grossing franchise. Nightmare on Elm Street's the third. Any
horror
thoughts on
franchise
first?
Or just horror franchise in general?
Oh, we're doing all, not the four competing here?
I wonder if it's the Conjuring shit.
It is not.
No? Good.
Not enough movies.
Good. Halloween.
Halloween.
Yeah.
Nailed it. Right. Yeah. And so for the others, we have Alien vs. Predator. It was released on August 13th, 2004 by 20th Century Fox. It was made on a budget somewhere between $60 and $70 million. Not quite sure on that. And it grossed $177.4 million at the international box office. Alien as a franchise has grossed over $1.6 billion, not including these two crossover films. That did so over the course of seven films. Predator has had four films in the franchise, not including the two crossovers, and has made over $443 million. What's particularly impressive, I think, about that is, particularly with Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, they are made on, like, shoestring budgets.
Absolutely.
So, like, only really, I said this one was made for $30 million. That is the highest by far. And I think probably a lot of it has to do with acquiring and getting both franchises involved with that.
For sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, these horror movies, these slasher movies from the 80s specifically, just make a butt ton of money. And then you have Alien vs. Predator made on much larger, much higher inflated budgets, but also make a shit ton of money, $1.6
billion. And I think they're even like the Alien, I don't know, Predator not as much, certainly, but Alien out of all four franchises is like the highest brow. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for sure.
The most prestige. Obviously, it's made the most money, but like it got the most non-horror audience to watch the film.
Yeah, and I mean, you have directors like Ridley Scott, James Cameron, big name. David Fincher did Alien 3, huge name. So, like, it also has the most prestigious filmmakers involved as well.
I think sort of that science fiction element of it, too, that's sort of involved with it. Because, I mean, you can't really say the same for, say, Freddy and or Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th, but... I guess Predator, yeah, to a certain extent.
I mean, John McTiernan directed the first Predator. That's Die Hard.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a big-time action filmmaker, so it still has the same level of prestige, just in a different way.
But what's funny, though, is that, like, of the four that we just named, Predator has to be the lesser of them, right? Like the least of them, almost, in a way? Meaning in terms of just, like, popularity... I mean, by budget number, or by the what they raked into the box office.
Box office, yeah. Number of films, like...
I mean, for me personally, like, it's barely on my radar. Like, the Alien, you know, I love the Alien movies. I've watched every Alien movie. I go rewatch Alien, and the Predator movies were... But, like you said, they're kind of more action-y than horror.
For sure. I mean, I think it centers around the fact that the plot is about hunters, a hunter race.
Right.
So, like, it just lends itself to that horror angle, even though there are sci-fi elements to it. There's a lot of dystopian elements to it, especially later on in the franchise.
It's too much for people.
Yeah. I mean, it can be, for sure. So, like, you know, it comes down to what your cup of tea is, but, like, what the studios were obviously trying to do is just trying to capture the films of all these different franchises and make a buck.
Yeah.
And I think in certain ways that definitely comes through in the quality of the films that we get presented here.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, a lot.
All right, so now that we've got that, we want to get to the actual round one here. Here is where we are going to start analyze these things and giving them a score in the same fashion as an MMA bout or a boxing match.
Okay. Are you familiar with MMA at all, Andy?
This one where they hit each other in the face?
Yeah, no, yeah. That's accurate. Stuff? That's
yeah.
true.
No, yeah, I've...
I meant more the scoring, I guess.
I've watched some MMA.
All right, yeah. That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so
I play it on my Xbox.
You know? Yeah, that's cool. So, so then you gotta know how it's getting scored. There you go. That's perfect.
Do they do it accurately in the video games?
Yeah, actually, it's
dope.
I get my.
They're not all in Texas and Florida. Like
whenever it goes to a ground game, I'm out. I get my ass kicked. All right, but yes, I know how to.
We're going to go directors and scripts first to talk about these. Alien vs. Predator was written and directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. It is kind of a self-serious sci-fi script, despite the absolutely ridiculous premise. Paul W.S. Anderson is the go-to video game adaptation director, and he's kind of doing his thing in this movie. Are we familiar with Paul W.S. Anderson?
You mean Mia Jovovich's husband?
Yes.
Yes, I know him.
Yeah. From the Resident Evil movies, and he did the Mortal Kombat films, Beam, which I'm sure you are familiar with.
I'm familiar with at least two of them.
Yeah, that's good.
The Resident Evil films were pretty good.
There's
Resident
a couple.
Evil ones are great.
I mean, there's a lot of them, varying
really
in
is.
Degrees of quality, but there's a couple that I don't mind watching, certainly. The director for Freddy vs. Jason is Ronnie Yu. He is camping it up in this movie, although there's still a lot of like gory horror stuff happening. But I'd say it's a pretty campy film. Ronnie Yu is a Hong Kong martial arts film director who only recently came to America, an American film at this time. Anyone know his first movie? Also a camp horror classic from the late 90s.
Do not.
Bride of Chucky.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was his debut in American cinema. Honestly, kind of a similar vibe as Freddy vs. Jason.
I was just going to say, like, I wonder why they chose him for... And then, oh, okay, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So with this, I mean, I don't particularly think anything is going on directorially that is particularly impressive.
I don't think that's what these movies are about.
No. They're about... What are they about?
What are they about?
Not literally, but what are they? What are they about vibes-wise? What does the director need to capture?
Teenage nudity and later teenage nudity, because otherwise that's weird, right?
Yeah.
And then gore, I believe.
But not so much in the Alien and Predator film because it's not really gory.
Oh, I thought we were seeing almost like the Jason Freddy film, but with Alien and Predator. Alien, I guess, like I don't think Alien was ever really too much about. The violence with that at all. I think it was more the anxiety of it all.
Yeah, it's about the tension of what could happen and then it does happen. But
Alien went around and fucked shit up, though, or at least like the Xenomorphs did quite a bit in this movie, so they felt very aggressive in this one. But I guess you would say the gore. I guess you could say the tension, but I guess that's just inherent in any horror film.
It has to be to a certain extent, for sure. And I think, you know, to Paul W.S. Anderson's credit, I think he does capture some of that. Some of the scenes inside of that Antarctic underground pyramid are pretty claustrophobic.
Yeah.
I think some of the action stuff that he does, although I am annoyed by his constant quick cutting, he does get some of the action stuff pretty well, as well bringing in the kind of predator action stuff, the hunting. So I'd give him a little bit of credit for that. I think he captures some of that. Ronnie Yu, I mean, I like some of the campy stuff that's going on. He let that happen. Even some of the death scenes are kind of silly and ridiculous. I'm specifically thinking about the one on the porch where the guy is dreaming with Freddy and then he wakes up and his dad's head just comes off into his hands.
Yeah, that was...
Like, that's silly and funny, but also kind of like jump scary.
I was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, like, I don't know about jump scary. I was kind of like, no.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked that. But it also had some... Like Siri, like the one I can't remember the character's name, but like the kind of nerdy kid that dies like mid sentence.
at the end, after he has his hero moment, telling Kelly Rowland's character to go on.
And he's like telling her to go, and he's like, oh, you know, just go, I'll be fine. And then, like, he's just still.
And then, the camera goes down and it shows him, like, bleeding out. And he's like, oh, this guy's dead.
He's dead. Like, that was really effective. That was good.
Yeah, so there's moments for both. I think, ultimately, with the directors and the scripts, it kind of comes down to what your preference is a little bit. Like, the self-seriousness of Alien versus Predator is what kind of loses me a little bit. But also, I think that's, in some ways, a constraint of the genre. Like, I've never seen like a super campy sci-fi film unless it's like a straight up spoof like Spaceballs. At least I can't think of one off the top of my head. I mean, unless you guys have one.
No, not that I can really see at the top of my head.
Definitely not.
Yeah, so I think that's just like a constraint of the genre with sci-fi, whereas like horror films often lend themselves to camp and over the top. Like Evil Dead has made an entire living off of that one thing.
And within a horror movie, you can do the over the top, like almost comedic death, but still get really effective, scary, gory shit, you know?
Yeah, and get it to be cringy, but like at the same time, it's so ridiculous that it's just like naturally campy.
Especially in a nightmare film. Yeah. You know, like that's kind of, it became.
Because it's happening in a dream world, you can go over the top and it doesn't seem completely out of the realm of possibility.
Right. The folding them in half on the bed, like that is one that it's super campy. That is hilarious, but also gets that element of you just being like, oh, okay, yeah, it cringes. You makes you cringe a little.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hear kind of the bones cracking.
After he stabbed him 100 times.
Yeah, like, and then the blood is coming in underneath the door while she's in the shower. Like,
yeah.
There's effective cringiness and scariness to it while still being over the top. Like, it's ridiculous in the sense that, like, he didn't need to fold him up in the bed. He's dead.
He was already
but, like,
dead.
You do it to get,
dead,
like...
And then you fold him, and he goes, ah! And you're like, that dude was dead, man. But it still hurt when he got folded up.
Yeah, so, like, I think it just comes down to a matter of preference with this. I also want to take a moment in this round to talk about some of the acting. I'm going to kind of divide it into, and we'll put acting in quotes a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we can really be calling it that. They were there.
They were there.
They read lines. They remembered them.
They were doing a job that they were hired to do. I want to focus first on the leading characters. Monica Keena is the kind of final girl in Freddy versus Jason. And she's not in a lot. I don't have a lot of background on her.
She was familiar.
Familiar.
I've seen you somewhere.
Familiar as like a girl next door with a little bit of edge to her, kind of hot.
Right.
Probably smoked cigarettes. But like she's very much playing a type.
Drink, have a few beers. Yeah.
Yeah, but not go over the top with it.
No. She's the one that's taking care of. She'll take everyone's keys.
She's a virgin, but she could be nasty. She's a virgin in the film. They reference that many a time. That's also why she's the final girl. You cannot have had sex and survive a horror film. Mm-hmm. That is rules. And then in Alien vs. Predator, our leading character is Saniya Lathan. We familiar with her at all?
I was not.
Are you?
Yes. Love and Basketball is a favorite movie of mine from the late 90s, and she is the female character in that, and she is excellent. It makes me kind of sad to see her in an Alien versus Predator movie only 4 years after Love and Basketball when she was doing, like, actual good stuff.
I mean, she was a standout. Like, in terms of everyone other than Tommy Flanagan, because that dude's just my boy from Sons of Anarchy. She was at least a standout. And that's maybe not saying much, but for the most part, out of these two films that we're talking about, yes, she was probably the best of them.
Yeah, and I think it's very important, especially in Alien versus Predator, to have someone that can kind of hold the movie together, because you're dealing with two extraterrestrial beings that don't speak. So you kind of have to have someone, and like, she did her darndest to do that. I'm not sure if it was successful, but like, she did her darndest to keep it together.
It was like Michael Jordan working with the Looney Tunes, it felt like. Yeah, just like a little bit.
Except Michael Jordan's not a very good actor, so I lathe it.
No,
is.
No, no, I get it.
But yeah,
like,
I absolutely.
I mean, that's going to be your first thing.
Yeah.
Is going to be, I'm going to interact with things that aren't here and talk to them. And yeah. I mean, then LeBron had to do it. Although I think LeBron was at least in a movie before that.
He was. He was in Trainwreck in 2015 with Bill Hader. Decent movie.
All right.
That's fine.
I heard LeBron also tried to bring back Jason Voorhees.
Did he?
Yeah.
Go.
There was like a rumor that
like
he
a
was...
similar motive as Freddy Krueger. Like, I need my power back.
Yeah,
even though he seems doing great.
He wanted to kill children. and, you know, no, but he was like going to put up a bunch of money to like, because there was like that lawsuit going on between Victor Miller and Sean S. Cunningham or whatever. And LeBron was like going to put up a bunch of money and basically it didn't do shit. Is what I heard on another podcast.
Dude, Matt, I would see an executive produced LeBron,
yeah.
James.
I'm just like shocked he's like interested in those franchises. Like that's just
bizarre. But I mean, maybe it was just he has so much money, and maybe he was just like drunk one night. Like, fuck it.
LeBron definitely doesn't drink. Yeah. He is still one of the best players in the NBA at age 42. He can't drink. No way.
He contains multitudes, all right?
That's how you keep that
my
physique.
My athletic body is not drinking. Just a diet, Dr. Thunders.
Yeah. All right. And then I also just want to go through these supporting cast members because, honestly, that's probably the most fun part of the actors is, like, random people that you know showing up. So Alien vs. Predator, you got Ewan Bremner from Trainspotting and from any other movie that needs a very slender Scottish man. You also have Tommy Flanagan.
Slender. Give him nerdy too.
Yeah, nerdy, like slender, whatever. Tommy Flanagan, you said Chips from Sons of Anarchy. Yep. Also in Smoking Aces, which is a favorite of mine.
Another great film.
Yeah, and he shows up all over the place, but great character actor. Shows up in this. Not given a ton to do, but... Nice He's to bad. See him.
Yeah. No, kind of made it look like a bitch, actually. They just throw him in a hole, and they're like, fight it, buddy. And he completely just freaks out.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think they did him dirty in this film. But anyway.
Yeah, they did do him dirty a little bit. I won't disagree there. Freddy versus Jason, we have some other character actors. We have, not a character actor, but Kelly Rowland.
Destiny's
Child.
What character does she embody in, like, in other films that we've all seen?
She's one of Destiny's Children.
Yeah. I mean, Kelly Rowland, again, like.
She was in the Dilemma video with Nelly texting him on fucking MS Word, right?
I think she brought that energy to this actual movie. That's what I got from it, where it was like, it just seems like it's an extended play of that music video.
Actually, she didn't do too bad. She didn't do too
no,
bad.
No. I actually quite like the scene where she's talking shit to Freddie and like calling him ugly. Like, it's over the top.
No,
but
you
like,
didn't like that, Andy? You're giving it like a...
The slur I thought was unnecessary.
I was
uncomfortable with it fucking 22 years ago, and I knew it was coming, and I was like, it'll be fine. I was like,
it got me this time. Before, though, because I'm a terrible person, I was like, just washed over me.
Didn't even notice.
It didn't register. I'm like, that was a good
even
one.
In 2003, it wasn't cool. Like, it was like, why?
I mean, 2003, I was 14 years old, though.
It was
so,
cool
like,
when
it,
I was in 2000.
Yeah, I was
30.
I was unaware as well. I'm not saying that's okay, but, like, I was very unaware
at 14.
I think I graduated from it when I graduated elementary school, right? Or, like, middle school. I feel like in high school, we were like, you can't be doing that.
Right.
What are you doing?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I was 30, so by then I was like,
ooh.
Other people shouldn't be saying that word.
I mean, fair, but like, I that
who the fuck
that's
were you calling
line,
that when you were 13? What
that's
is this?
The line she was. That's
she
the line
was given.
She was given.
Absolutely.
She
it
did a fine
her.
Job
Character
in that scene.
Her.
Yeah,
she's
absolutely.
Got to stick to who she is in the
absolutely.
Movie.
But
absolutely.
Also another case
it
of like,
rough.
I'm kind of upset to see her in this. Like, you were a Destiny's Child. Working with Beyonce, and now that's over, you're in Freddy versus Jason. That's a tough beat.
Well, hold on. Here's a point I can at least bring up, though. Can't even remember her name. Who was the third? What is her name? And exactly. So Kelly's doing great.
Michelle Williams?
Wait, no, what? No, was it?
You might be right.
I think
maybe
it's Michelle Williams.
Right.
Look that up while I'm going to the next people.
Look that up.
But there's also a guy named Chris Marquette. He's playing The guy who has the random death after he's talking to Kelly Rump. Yeah,
right. I've seen him in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, he's in Just Friends as the Notebook is So Gay guy. That's a very funny scene. He's also in The Girl Next Door. So he was kind of floating around in this teen comedy space back in this time.
It is Michelle Williams.
Nice. Encyclopedic brain.
I thought it was Michelle Williams. And then there's also Kyle Labine, who plays Freeburg. I've never seen this guy before, but I love Freeburg in this movie. The stoner who...
He doesn't even play that big of a role.
No,
I would
no
like to,
but like
I would
he
like
has,
bring
he has
up
like,
but he does chew up the scenes.
He chews up
every
the scenes.
He's in it.
Like, and I love true. That. Because like you just kind of need that in these stupid horror films. It's like someone who doesn't really belong there, but is just going for it and is funny.
Really bummed me out he had to exit the film. But
I kind of liked his death scene. It was kind of badass.
It was good.
Like,
at
I mean,
the line.
He plays a very important role in the movie. I mean, not that the plotting is super important in Freddy versus Jason, but like he puts Jason to sleep, which allows the later events of the film to unfold. So like he plays an important role, and he has the best line of the film, which is that goalie is pissed about something. And I never heard anyone refer to Jason as a goalie before, and I loved it.
It
I was here for it.
Too long for anyone to do that because
took too
it's
long
what he's
to
wearing.
Make that joke. It was right there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think hockey is even mentioned in any of them until like Jason X.
Yeah.
It's the only reason as a kid who grew up a hockey fan and then playing hockey, hadn't even seen any of the Jason movies or any of the Friday the 13th movies, but loved the guy because he wore a hockey mask. It's the reason why I like Casey Jones for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
It's all the
it's
same
like,
shit.
It's a super important characteristic of the character.
And
like
yet it took this guy,
Kyle Labine, to come in and make that joke. And I loved that joke.
Love
I was
it.
Very much here for that joke. All right, so after all that, taking into account...
Oh, wait, you forgot an important...
Oh, yeah, sorry, go.
Jason Ritter.
Who's Jason Ritter?
John Ritter's kid.
Oh.
He's the
okay.
He's the one who escapes from the asylum in the beginning.
Oh yeah.
And
the
he went on to do
Will, the
things.
Love interest.
Yeah.
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 Will,
the love interest. That's you remember John Ritter, like Three's Company. That's his
remember
son.
John Ritter.
Okay.
And he's who's he married? He's married. You know that show Yellow Jackets?
Oh yes. Love Yellow
so,
Jackets.
Not seen it. The lead
Melanie Lynskey?
That's his wife.
Oh, okay.
That's Jason Ritter's wife.
That's kind of a sneaky power couple. I like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
I
yeah.
love Melanie Lynskey.
Yeah, no,
I think
me too.
She's incredible.
Absolutely, and he's. I like him as well because I liked John Ritter. But yeah.
All right, I missed that. Nice.
Another
good call.
Another sneaky one. Yeah.
Who's the guy that broke out with him?
I don't know, but he was really good. The little
See,
blonde.
I think he was a bit of a show stealer here.
Yeah,
he
no,
was.
He was really good.
His death scene too, both in the dream
really
world
good.
And then in the real world, that was actually really good.
Yeah, he's the one that ends up kicking the whole thing off.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
everybody
exactly.
Afraid,
he alerts everyone to this cover up, this thing that's going on,
yeah.
kind
Basically
of sneakily
just by saying his name.
Yeah,
and like
yeah. Yeah, he kicks off the whole thing. All right, Dick. So taking into account all of this, the directors, the script, the tone, all these different actors, who's winning for you and how do you score this particular round?
What's the scoring regimen? 1 to 5, 1 to 10?
Well, it's that. It's the
it's the MMA boxing.
Oh, it's the MMA. Oh, so it's like the...
I thought you played the fucking game.
I do play the game. Although I don't, I usually just let the computer do the scoring. I'm not like,
it's like, I'm going to get up now.
I mean, I would go with, you know, Freddy versus Jason on this one. And a lot of it has to do with Predator being the weak link for me because, you know, I liked the Predator movies, but I was never like a big Schwarzenegger fan in the 80s. So like Predator was just like, whatever. But like the Alien movies I really like, but the Predator weighs it down, and Jason and Freddy are like my two favorites. So,
do you think it's more about your history with the franchises, or do you think
I think it's more about watch? I enjoy watching the characters getting killed by characters that I'm familiar and comfy with, and in scenes that bring me, or in settings that are grounded and bring me, you know what I mean. Whereas the Alien movies take place in, you know, places that I'll never be
and can't potentially conceive of.
Yes.
Right.
So like it just, it's more of an observation with that movie, whereas the Nightmare and to a greater extent, the Friday movies, I can embody what it's like to be in that environment. Like, you know.
For sure. Beam?
I think I got to go 10-8 Freddy versus Jason. Here is why.
Okay.
I feel like it's a fairly dominant round here. And the reason why I believe that is we just spent 90% of this section talking about Freddy versus Jason. I think that's one at least proof of the reason why. Two, it just feels like Alien versus Predator falls flat on its face in terms of what it's trying to do. It's like trying to do the serious, nuanced alien thing, but also throw the campy element in there when it's like either lean into the like the, you know, that high anxiety sort of intricate storytelling part of it. But at the end of the day, the reason why we're going to see that movie is to watch them fucking battle it out. And you barely get that, I think. You just don't see a lot of it. It's really them killing. And whereas with Freddy versus Jason, it just it knew the assignment and executed it as best as it could. I mean, you know, in terms of execution of what it's supposed to be doing, did a great job. So, and also like the cast of characters, significantly more memorable than most of what went on Alien vs. Predator. So that's why I have to give it a 10-8.
I agree. And I'm going to go 10-9 for Freddy vs. Jason because I do think Paul W.S. Anderson is doing some cool stuff in terms of the action and the claustrophobia. I think Saniya Lathan, like we said, is the best actor by far out of anyone in these movies. So, like, I have to give some respect to that in this round in particular. But it is still Freddy versus Jason because I love the campiness of it. I love the way that they leaned into it. Like you said, they understood the assignment. Like, we're there to just have a good time. And while it's not always successful, like, I had way more fun watching Freddy versus Jason. Whereas, like, Alien versus Predator, it has moments where I had fun, but often it felt like a slog getting to those moments.
I don't even need the people. The people don't need to be there. They could be, like, monitoring it from the outside.
It felt like a 25-minute short film would have been more appropriate.
Yeah, yeah. Or even do it almost like, what is it, Godzilla versus Kong? Like, there is at least that element where, like, people are on the outside and there's casualties on the outside. But, like, it felt like we had to come up with this reason as to why these people needed to be there for them to get killed. And really, at the end of the day, it's like, I just kind of want to watch Predator fight some xenomorphs. That's what I want to see. But you just got very little of that and these people getting their lives completely fucked up.
Yeah.
So
Beam has it 10-8. I have it 10-9. Andy, now that you are familiar with the scoring system, give it a score.
I mean, I'm still not, but I'm going to say 10-9.
Okay. Yeah. That works. So 10-9, Freddy versus Jason for Andy and myself, 10-8 for Beam. And we are going to go to round two. Round two, we are going to be discussing the franchise's lore and how they put it to use in these particular films. So, Andy, I'm going to give you the floor. You're the big Friday the 13th fan, the big Nightmare on Elm Street fan. Talk to us about the kind of character lore and how it was implemented in this particular film.
I mean, it was definitely a nightmare film with, like, Jason guest starring. And I thought they did his... You know, and we've talked, you know, about lore and like how like I'm flexible with lore, you know, especially in a Friday 13th movie, you know, you got to be like, whatever. But like, I didn't like the water aspect of it, like just showing him some water. Like Jason's not afraid of water. He drowned and he's afraid of drowning.
Like being in the water.
And as like most people would be. But
wait, hold on. What about drinking water?
But he also...
Well, he's undead in a way, like, so does he need to drink water?
But he goes underwater in the movies.
Frequently.
Like, yeah, very frequently. He walks on the bottom of the lake.
I feel like he's wet a lot, actually. Yeah.
Frequently.
He's not afraid of water. Oh, okay. He's afraid of drowning, which he can't do now. So, like, that was a weird... I don't know.
But he was.
Thing.
And then Kelly Rowland almost had to, like, give him mouth to mouth. Yeah. Which... Already, him being undead, the mouth area is just kind of... And, like, I don't think he brushes. I don't think there is, like, any sort of...
And his rib cage is exposed.
Sure, I guess, like, but I'm talking about the mouth. Like,
no, I'm talking about the usefulness of mouth to mouth.
Oh well,
like, what's it gonna,
do to a character who's
just gonna
undead?
Yeah,
oh, like,
unclear.
Yeah, the practicality of it.
His lungs
I don't know what they were thinking.
You know.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the whole mechanics of the ending setup there.
Yeah,
it's quite questionable.
I don't think they were thinking.
No,
yeah. It threw.
But like Jason or Freddy's lore is used very well because, like you said, it is a new line, and you know, New Line is the house that Freddy built. Like, and it's very skewed towards Freddy. So like, Freddy's lore is very much intact, and is used very well. You know, with the, you know, using Jason and like getting in his mind, and even like with the cast of characters, you know, the way they, like, his lore is used perfectly, but Jason's is almost like they don't even care.
And it takes place in Springwood, Ohio. Yeah. It's Freddy's territory. I mean, they go to Camp Crystal Lake at the end, but like, largely this is a Freddy movie,
and
like, he's just kind of
Jason
using
Jason as a, you know, a scared child in the lake, almost drowning. They show his mother real quick, and then they're like, oh, he's scared of taking a shower, and that was it. That's really all they...
Nah, they were just picking on him because he smelled.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing that I did like in terms of sort of the lore is the way that they, at the end, used their weapons against each other. I always like that. Like, it's kind of like the moment in the Avengers Endgame where, like, Iron Man picks up the Thor shield.
Right.
It's fun when they do things like that. So, like, when Jason ultimately kills Freddy, he does so with his claw hand going through his chest. Like, mm-hmm. I did like some of that. It's total fan service, but, like, I'm here for it if it's executed well. And it was executed fine.
Yeah.
In this, I had fun with
Freddy
it.
Freddy didn't actually die.
Yeah, of course not.
That wink.
The wink at the end, of course.
Which was
brilliant. I mean, how do you kill these characters? They never die. Yeah, they come back film after film. It's not important. It's just, like, how do they die at the end of this film?
Yeah. But, I just don't think the Jason lore was worked at all. And like Camp Crystal Lake didn't even fucking look like it. You know what I mean? It's like they didn't even, like, the video game did better, a better job at showing what it looks like. But like, they were just like, yeah, cabin, it'll be fine. But
there's a dock.
Yeah. But any, any fan is going to be like, come on. That's not.
Well, I was reading a story that said the original like scripts for this film was like 2.5, 2:45, and then they brought in David S. Goyer to do a rewrite of the film, and he basically cut out all the Jason stuff because it was a movie for New Line.
Right. And you know what I was just thinking is, when you just said dock, like, it struck me, there's no dock at Camp Crystal Lake. The dock is at Higgins Haven, which is
Jesus Christ. I'm not even
three,
I don't know
which
what
is
I'm
in
saying.
Part three. Like, Camp Crystal Lake like has like a dock, but it's just a floater, you know?
It doesn't
have the lights on it or whatever. But so they're like,
yeah,
they
but
couldn't
you
even
gotta
get the
be
camp
able to
right.
See the whole thing.
Yeah,
happen.
But I guess. But
you gotta
they were
light
like,
it up.
They're like, yeah, let's go to Camp Crystal Lake, and then they're like, psych.
Well, that's what I was trying to say. Well, how close is Camp Crystal Lake? Like,
so that's
well, how a, are
that's
they,
the other thing is
what's
like
the proximity.
So Camp Crystal
Camp
Lake
Crystal
is in New Jersey,
Yeah.
And they were in Springwood, Ohio.
So
they made a
we're crossing state lines, multiple
10-12 hour trip.
I was going to say 8,
and it happened like very quickly. And I know they had a lot of tranquilizers to keep them asleep, but like again, the mechanics of this whole ending doesn't seem particularly well thought out. It's not like. And again, it's a Freddy versus Jason movie.
Do you think they care?
No,
is that even a thing to care about?
No, but like when you're putting it under a little bit of a microscope here, like we're doing, like these things come up. There are questions.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
We need fodder for this.
And like the worst thing a horror movie can do, I say it all the time, is be forgettable.
Right.
And I think it's forgettable, you know? It's
there's some memorable scenes, but largely forgettable.
As a Friday the 13th movie. Like,
yeah. So Alien versus Predator, the lore, I mean, Alien... Their whole thing, there are kind of three types of aliens. There's the face hugger, there's the chest burster, and then there's the xenomorph. The face hugger is kind of the infant. They have to attach to a human being. They implant the eggs inside the human being. They grow.
burst
out of the chest, and then they grow into a xenomorph. But aliens need a human body or a warm place to harvest those eggs. Predator, their whole lore is that they hunt for sport, essentially. And they have been doing this for years. They've done it with human beings. They've done it on various planets throughout the entire franchise. Here, what the movie is supposing is that they are harvesting aliens as the ultimate hunt. And they have lured a group of human beings to harvest grown xenomorphs so that they can hunt. That is essentially what's happening here. And I mean, as far as the lore goes, it's pretty well balanced. It's used effectively if you're into that sort of thing. But like, that's what it is here.
I mean, I guess, yeah, if we're trying to grade this on the execution of this particular round and this topic, yes, they did a great job. What it set up was not as interesting, but the thing is that they did it well. They were able to tie at least both of them together.
They tied them both together pretty equally. And I think part of what made that so successful is there's a series of comic books that already did this in the late 80s that crossed over the Alien versus Predator franchise, and kind of they had a template already of how to do it. They were doing this Freddy and Jason thing on the fly. They don't really have anything to do with one another. They had to kind of come up with it from scratch. There's a lot of stories about the different iterations of this script. There's one where Freddy is a former counselor who molested Jason as a child, and that was the crossover of the film.
And you know, like, it sounds like that's like wild, but like it really could line up. Like,
I mean, it sounds
like it could have been a, you know, a 17 or 18 year old Fred Krueger in 1957, because like even age wise and years and everything, it kind of worked. And then he could have worked in Ohio or worked in New Jersey,
and then moved to Ohio and then pieced out. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not
that could have worked.
That would have gave that movie purpose. Yeah, and I don't think it right. Would've. No, but that's not what it needed to be. It just
exactly.
Then it would have had to have been a real movie.
Exactly, and that's part of the thing is like they just leaned into the campy elements of it, and like. Ultimately, I appreciate that because, like, let's not get too serious in a movie that is entitled Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah, but kid drown. What? Right.
They could have had something that had longevity, you know?
True.
Like, the 2003 is time-stamped all over Freddy versus Jason. Like, it is not a time. Even the 1980 movie feels more timeless than, you know, because like even we talked about the soundtrack a little too. Like, the soundtrack alone is just like,
it is very much of a piece.
That, you know, like, yeah.
I mean, Beam, you're very into this.
Uh-huh.
Freddy versus Jason soundtrack. How do you feel about it?
No, I it didn't register with me at all, oddly enough. I know nu metal is like my bag.
It's kind of your whole bit.
It's as a human being.
Yes. Yes, you define yourself about the nu metal bit.
I don't do it on purpose. It's not my fault that somehow Limp Bizkit recently made a good album.
Not true. All right, since we've now crossed into Limp Bizkit territory and how Beam is going to defend them as good, we are going to move on. This particular round, I got to give it to Alien vs. Predator. Like Andy said, it feels very skewed towards Freddy. I don't care about franchise lore all that much, but at the same time, like, the stories that people tell are important. The original things are important. Like, the original Alien movie is one of the greatest movies of all time. The original Predator movie, to me, is excellent. I know you're not as huge a fan, but, like, I mean, it's memed all over the place, the Arnold and...
Prey was excellent.
Prey was excellent, too, yeah. So there's, like, a lot of stuff with these franchises, and you have to be respectful. So I'm going to give it to Alien vs. Predator in this round, 10-9. It's not a total blowout because I still like seeing Freddy and Jason in these movies. They do a pretty good job, especially with the kills, and to me they do a good job honoring the slasher movie as a whole with two iconic slasher characters. And so I'm going to give it 10-9 to Alien vs. Predator in this particular round.
I'm going to go 10-8 also, Alien versus Predator. I didn't think I would go against my franchise, but, like, really thinking it like that, like, they did Jason a little dirty by just kind of being like,
you're just here.
Yeah, a couple of points and, like, and I didn't like that. I think there was a lot that they could have worked on that would have made it a little better. So, yeah, I'll go 10-8 ABP.
I mean, I'm gonna go 10-9 AVP. Like, I will agree though. Jason was very much forgotten, much like he was by the counselors in that lake. But I mean, I think that
and drinking.
I just terrible. Actually, that pissed me off the most. I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And then it became Freddy. I'm like, I can't dwell on this. But anyway, no, the balance of having you know, the alien lore with the Predator lore, I thought, like, yeah, it, based on this round, on the criteria, like, again, one of the things that can piss me off about UFC, it's like, well, the fucking criteria of what you can win by. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, that's what you got to give the Alien versus Predator here, 10-9.
They also bake this lore into the actual setup of the film. And the setup of Alien versus Predator, again, is that the Predators are hunting these aliens. The aliens need human beings, so the Predators drag humans to Antarctica. Now, again, the mechanics of this are very questionable to me because I'm not sure how they got humans to go there. Something about a heat signature in Antarctica. What if they missed it?
Yeah. And
it's
then,
loose.
And then, like, it's like that whole pyramid underground and everything. Like, yeah, how did they assemble that quickly and get to, like,
it's very loose.
Yeah.
So, but that's the setup, and that's how they're using it in Freddy versus Jason. Again, they're using Freddy is dead. He is in hell. He is very weak because no one has feared him in a very long time, and he needs fear to get strength.
Thank God, Hypnosil.
And the town of Springwood, Ohio, has managed to suppress him for a very long time. So he decides to get inside Jason's head, bring him back, and use him to inspire fear in the people of Springwood, Ohio. And in doing so, he hopes to bring himself back. In both franchises, in both movies, though, there are unintended consequences of this plan of both the Predators and Freddy, and shit goes off the rails. And again, I have problems with the setup of both, but this is the setup. This is round three.
All right.
It is upsetting that that's just how they both did it. How it's both like just really weird premises, but that, I mean, that is sort of the tie-in that you can do with it. But, I mean, I kind of got to give it to what I think is interesting, at least with, like, Predator, Alien versus Predator, is just, like, the, I think luring them in, like, with that. Although that just feels like a weird thing. How do you lure in like humans with that? How did they know specifically for that?
Exactly. It's thin. There was a heat signature that they noticed, and they're like, "Oh, let's go check this out." Like,
and then they found this.
They found
temple
this temple, this pyramid where there are aliens being grown.
There's definitely going to be archaeologists that need to find this.
Yes, and then they bring in their crack team of experts to go explore this thing. And this term experts is just thrown around so loosely in this movie. Everyone's an expert, but they're really bad at their jobs.
No, that's
the whole thing, like,
very, like, you know, this that works with modern times right now. They all have podcasts.
They all have podcasts, and they're all experts when they don't
Speaking
know shit.
Speaking of which,
hi. That's us.
Like, I thought that Freddy versus Jason was at least an interesting premise, but where I thought it was a little weak was why would they fear. Because it wasn't that Jason or Freddy needed them to have fear. He needed them to fear him.
So I think the idea that Freddy had here was that they would assume, and it was actually quite effective, they would assume it was the return of Freddy And that's what everyone does, and that's why people start mentioning Freddy's name again.
All right.
He's brought back into the consciousness.
Make that mental leap? Like, was that we were?
They
supposed
talk
to,
about it.
Does
it's
he
not,
talk about it?
Yeah.
Okay. All
right. Yeah, I guess you're right. They do talk. They do talk about that, and that's why, like, when the guy gets out and he starts going, "Oh, it's Freddy, it's Freddy." They're like, "Don't say that." And then,
I must have checked out at that point. Of just,
yeah, I was,
like,
no,
and
understand.
I was the opposite. Line. Like on my rewatch of Freddy versus Jason, even though there were parts where I was like, "This," I was at least engaged the whole time. Alien versus Predator took me twice because I like the first time I straight up fell asleep.
Oh, Alien Predator is there for it.
So. I do have a problem with the Freddy versus Jason lore as well. It's a little bit thin, the setup rather. Freddy's always been presented throughout these movies as a pretty smart guy, at least within the dream realm. Like, he understands all of this, right? He never thought about the fact that Jason Voorhees would go off the rails and start stealing the king.
He was going to be sentient, you know. Like, he might have maybe even just thought that he could like. Puppeteer him like he did that kid in part three, you know?
True, but like that's the thing is like Jason Voorhees, of course he's going to go off the rails and start stealing kills from you.
Although I don't think he really took orders from anyone other than like his mother.
But as cheesy as it was, I love when Freddy gets mad and is like, "She's mine."
Yeah, no, it's great. It's actually good, but like that was my only thing. It was like it was just a little bit loose. That, like, Freddy has always been presented as a pretty smart guy, pretty in tune, always making pretty good plans as far as, like, this dream demon thing that he is. And he didn't have the foresight to see that Jason Voorhees was going to not be easily controlled.
Yeah.
Who's ever controlled that guy? Nobody.
I just think, yeah, it's either it's his mom or it's no one.
Yeah. Like, the only thing he has is just extreme bloodlust for people drinking, doing drugs and having sex at an early age.
Yeah.
That's his whole MO.
Yeah, no mature adults. All teenagers.
Well, he did kill the dad.
Killed Tommy's mom.
All right.
Killed Tommy's mom, killed the dad, chopped his head off right quick. Yeah. Also will kill anyone in his way.
Well, that's what I mean.
He doesn't
that's
discriminate
more just like
much.
That was a convenience thing. Like, get out. That's his way of pushing you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I there's something about it where I just sort of enjoy sort of that I as loose as it is, I like the luring in of these people to basically continue on. Or I guess is it a snapshot in time is what we're seeing, I guess? You know, maybe I'm pulling it apart at this point. Is it a snapshot in time where like it was this one time they lured in humans, the predators, and it went wrong?
Yeah, I mean it's gotta be because like
how long has this been going on for?
They have been harvesting aliens for quite some time, according to the movie. That's why there's all these archaeological pictures on this pyramid. So this is a snapshot in time.
It just went wrong.
Yes. And it went wrong this time. But I feel like it has to have always have been going wrong. But then again, it's part of the sport for the predators. And that's why I like, that's why I guess it's exciting for them because it's the ultimate hunt. Aliens are really good to hunt. So even
what was the predator's name in this one? The one that like so
there were three, but Scar was the main one.
Scar. Was it like we lost those guys. We lost Scar. Let's try it again next time. I guess it must be for them.
But that is like the whole predator thing is like they just hunt. That is their entire MO. Just like Jason killing people doing wrong things in their teenage years. Predators just hunt people. That's what
so
they do.
With that, I do like that sort of the luring it in, and that's where you just sort of get the connection with the alien creatures in this one.
I do like seeing though Jason exist in the dream realm. Like that is a interesting and exciting thing that's new.
But they dip their toe in it. It felt
they
like.
Dip. They do. It's very much dipping their toe in it. That opening scene, they're both in hell. That could have been better. He just pops out of the ground.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I'm gonna go Alien versus Predator slightly. I do. It's got to be 10-9 Alien versus Predator because I'm thin on both, but I just have a lot more questions about the Freddy versus Jason one.
I'm gonna go the opposite, but I'm gonna say Freddy Jason over AVP, but I'll go 10-9 as well because they were like pretty close. But I liked the setup of Freddy bringing Jason back to do his bidding, and that he wasn't strong enough. The execution was a little flat, But again, I think it might just be a familiarity thing. Like, I'd rather see Freddy versus Jason fall a little flat than a better executed Alien versus Predator, personally. So
totally fair. So we got 10 nines all around. Beam and I are going Alien versus Predator. Andy is going with Freddy versus Jason. Our titular characters go on a killing spree in an outdoor environment. In Freddy versus Jason, Freddy shows up to a keg party. This keg party is also serving as a memorial service for someone that he previously killed. There are teenagers doing drugs and drinking all over the place. Jason shows up and goes on a killing spree. It's very exciting. Love it. Alien versus Predator, similar thing. They lure the humans to this pyramid. A certain amount of those humans go into the pyramid to explore stuff, while some other people stay out on the surface and kind of are standing watch, let's say. At this moment, the Predators show up and they just make light work of these dudes standing outside so that the humans on the inside are kind of trapped in there. The aliens can harvest, do what they need to do inside so that ultimately we get Alien versus Predator at the end. So we have these two scenes. Andy, which one do you prefer, and give us some of your favorite moments from that particular scene?
I mean, I'm definitely, again, going to have to say Freddy versus Jason with the cornfield, because I like the environments that I can relate to, and I grew up in Vermont, right directly across the street from like a fucking 4 mile long cornfield, and I can relate to being drunk in a cornfield, and I think it would be terrifying to have a flaming Jason busting everybody up. But yeah, I think him being on fire, it's probably my favorite part of the whole movie. Maybe even, you know, just but like that visual.
I think by far, him on fire, that is important.
Is this a real question? Like, it's clearly, yeah, no, I'm sorry. Why, like, they make light work? I think right there, it's sort of like the description of it. Yeah, because, like, it's almost a not memorable scene. They do it, it's over, you're like, cool, the Predators are here, let's get to work, and then you don't. But, like, with Freddy versus Jason, now listen, I did not ever get drunk and be in a cornfield. I actually currently now live in a house where there is a gigantic fucking cornfield behind me. Nice. Haven't gotten drunk and watered into it. A little afraid of the
you're
bobcat
an adult
that
now.
Wanders around.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. It's fear.
Okay.
I'm
solely
sorry.
Fear.
It's not responsibility. It's fear. Much like how fucking scary it must be to watch someone on fire coming through. Like, you can see it from a ways away.
And that's actually, like, one of my favorite shots is when, like, he's going through on fire and then it goes from above and it's just the whole cornfield on fire behind him.
That's a lot.
Fucking outstanding. And then it goes to the next part where he slices some dudes up, one of whom is talking shit to him.
Yep.
Like, what?
Well, what else are you going to do when you're drunk and you're a teenager?
If a huge guy in a hockey mask comes up to me who is wielding a machete, I am not talking shit to him.
No.
That is the last thing I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, that guy lights him on fire. He starts walking, kills those dudes, kills some of the other people in the main part of the party. And at this point, he throws his machete and it pierces a keg of beer. And that is what puts him out. He is no longer on fire because he stabs a keg of beer with his machete.
Resourceful.
It's fucking sick.
Yeah.
I love this scene. Did I create this round just so I could talk about this scene? Absolutely. I needed to give Freddy versus Jason a very strong scene.
Listen, for a lot of what we're talking about here in these movies, there's not a lot to, you know, be thankful for. And I honestly believe the bounty which was provided to us in that particular scene needs to be discussed and celebrated. So, I endorse this. Hell, I'm just going to go 10-7 Freddy versus Jason on this one.
Same.
I'm just going to say it right now. You want to know why? Because what the fuck is that other scene? Like,
fair enough. It's
like killing spree.
It's the best scene in the movie, in one versus a largely forgettable scene
it's just
in the other.
Exposition in the other. This is like, oh, here's the predators. Yeah. Cool.
This is almost meant to have been like a situation where we watch someone get absolutely annihilated. You set up, which shame on you, almost to a degree, to set up Alien versus Predator to be slaughtered like this by Freddy versus Jason.
Well, listen, I will say that Alien versus Predator, in its defense, and I'm going to go 10-8 Freddy versus Jason. So, in its defense, I'm not going to go as dramatic as 10-7.
I'm
going to go 10-8 because there's some good action stuff in this scene. This is where they introduce the chaotic camera style that he's going to employ during the action sequences. They do a lot of the quick cutting. They do a lot of quick cutting, this quick splatter of blood, and then the cutaway, which is how they managed to get away with a PG-13 rating in this movie, which is wild to
love
me.
It. Great job. Creative.
Wait, in Alien vs. Predator?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
PG-13 rating because like they just do this quick cutting thing. So they introduce a lot of that. It's interesting. It's very much of a time, 2003, 2004, that quick cutting action stuff like that everyone was using. Bourne Supremacy made it like famous, so like I like some of that stuff. I'll give it 10-8, but like it's the best scene in the movie by far in Freddy versus Jason. It's so memorable, it's so much fun. Like if everything could have been like that,
right,
that would have been like a memorable movie. There's some really good kills, it's funny, you get Freeburg calling him a hockey goalie. It's got all the pieces that I want from a Freddy versus a movie entitled Freddy versus Jason.
All I wanted from that movie.
Yeah. And it's like, all encapsulated in that scene.
If we could have stayed in that scene for a good like 45 minutes, you know, first 30 minutes setup, 45 minutes, that fucking cornfield.
Agreed. That actually would have been excellent because the first 30 minutes aren't bad because it does set up them getting to the cornfield. Again, this cornfield keg party is serving as a memorial to the person that he already killed, which is just, it's brutal. Like, we're out here trying to remember our friend and then you show up again and just start people up on fire.
On fire.
That's excellent.
I think it's the fire that gets me. I'm like, I don't know what to do with this.
It reminds me a lot of Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2. The scene at the pool party.
Yes.
Which was like one of the most, I mean, at the time, like just so fucking brutal where he like comes popping out of the swimming pool and just starts icing everybody and like, you know, like burning people with the grill and like cutting people open. Like that's like what the...
He didn't get enough chances to do that in this film.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing is like, the slasher genre, at the end of the day, like, it is mostly about the kills and the fun. Mm-hmm. So, like, having him in this cornfield on fire, throwing his machete through someone into a keg of beer that then puts him out, like, that's creative stuff. It's great stuff. That's fun. That's, like, what we're here for. So, like, yeah, I'm about this scene. And yes, I created this round so that I could just talk about that scene.
We don't have a fetish for murder. We just...
I do.
All right, you never... I was gonna try to have fun and give us cover, but who am I?
This is what we've all been waiting for. This is what we've all been going to. These movies are called Freddy versus Jason and called Alien versus Predator. So we have to talk about the final battles between these titular villains. In Freddy versus Jason, again, I'm a thin on the mechanics of how they execute this exactly. But the long and short of it is Freddy and Jason meet up at Camp Crystal Lake. The characters somehow lure Freddy out of the dream world into the real world so that Freddy and Jason can fight. In Alien vs. Predator, they spent this whole time setting this whole thing up where the aliens grow into xenomorphs, and then finally we get the queen xenomorph versus Scar. And interestingly, in Alien vs. Predator, there's a team-up where, I forget her character's name, but Sanaa Lathan's character teams up with Scar, and they fight the xenomorph together. Yes, Lex. They fight the xenomorph together. Let's discuss. Beam, you first. What are your thoughts?
So I, you know, a little bit of pulling back the curtain. We did discuss making rounds. And one of the ones I threw out, didn't we kind of discuss, was the potential sexual tension that existed in either
franchises. We're going there, Andy. Now, I mean, with Freddy vs. Jason, I just threw out Freddy's weird little girl fetish. But the one that I think we were hopefully going to be able to discuss was Lex and Scar. Now, I don't think Scar knew what was going on at all here, but it really did feel like there was a moment where Lex looked at him and was like, "You are my hero. Take me with you," like, kind of situation, where Scar just kind of looked at him and was just like, "What are we doing? Are we gonna leave now? Are we gonna go fight these people?" There wasn't anything there for him, but it just felt like that team up. I was there for it because she was looking at him with these adoring eyes.
See, I don't.
That he seemed so confused by.
I agree with you. I like the team up, and I like how it turned into essentially a buddy cop movie in the last 10 minutes. But
Were they slow motion running?
Yeah, but I disagree that it is anything sexual. I think they were operating almost.
No, that was just funny to me.
Yeah, absolutely funny. I don't think it was actually there. But
I don't think she was absolutely into him. But in the moment, I'm like, this is funny.
I think they're just kind of operating on a mutual level of respect at that moment. Like,
are predators able to have that?
I think yes. If they
she did prove
if
herself.
They meet a worthy adversary or a worthy hunter who is on their level, there's just a level of respect there and a level of gratitude. And I think that was established in the first movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger and the predator that was hunting him.
Yeah.
They kind of basically fight to a draw almost. So that is established, and I like how it essentially turned into a buddy cop movie. Freddy versus Jason, they fight at kind of Camp Crystal Lake. That's
it. Didn't look anything like Camp Crystal Lake.
Is that going to be the issue for you here?
Yeah.
I also thought the fight, there's a couple good parts of the fight, but largely I felt it was pretty forgettable.
I kind of liked it.
Did you?
I don't know why. I think it was more just because it was fun. It was just interesting to see these two go at it. Whereas I guess there wasn't much of the buildup for me. An alien versus predator, because when they were fighting and the alien and the queen, Xenomorph was doing her thing, I was I was impressed because I didn't in the movies I've seen, I haven't really seen a Xenomorph be doing that, which I thought was interesting. I was like, oh, it's a video game. That's fun.
Right.
Which, you said, the adaptation part of it. Whereas the Freddy versus Jason one just felt more natural for some reason, where we were leading to this moment. You get to see them do it. And the payoff to me was, I thought, fine. I thought it was good. It was a little better. Edged it out on this one for me.
Yeah, so I think, the Freddy vs. Jason one certainly had moments. I really liked when Jason dragged Freddy through, the glass windows. There was, this large set of glass windows. That was a lot of fun. Again, I mentioned earlier, I like when Jason stabs Freddy through his chest with the claw. I think that was good.
Yeah.
It also just went on for, really long time, 25 freaking minutes of them just fighting, and there were only two or three memorable moments in 20 minutes or 25 minutes of screen time. So that to me is it just dragged out a little bit too long. The Alien versus Predator one was quicker. It had this buddy cop aspect. It's not blowing it out of the water because it's also pretty unmemorable. But to me, I just have to go 10-9 Alien versus Predator, just in the slightest of wins, just because to me, the best part of Freddy versus Jason already happened in that cornfield. And then when you get to this final battle, it's a little bit of a letdown when they get to actually fighting. There's only a couple good moments in 20, 25 minutes of screen time. It just didn't quite do it for me.
I think in Alien versus Predator, there was a couple moments that kind of took me out, and the queen doing the stuff that we've never seen. I think it was too much with the big legs and the running.
It was weird
and
to
you
me.
You saw too much of her.
But yeah, it was oh God, you're out in the open now. This is weird. You've always been just lurking.
Or
yeah.
Scurrying across the ceiling or and you'd see the quickness of the motion, but you wouldn't necessarily have to be exposed to the mechanics of what's making her be so quick.
Right.
And when you have those big spindly legs, you're I don't know, it took me out a little bit. But the cool moment that is making it tough is the chestburster when Scar catches it and snaps his neck. That was like, out of the whole movie, that was the one moment where I was like,
that's fucking sick.
Yeah, man. You know, like, that's like worth the price of admission, you know? Just catches it and snaps its little neck. And it, you're right, though, with, you know, the finale of Freddy versus Jason. It just goes on for so long. And there's no stakes, you know what I mean? There's zero stakes involved. And that's like, you know that with two unkillable characters. But right off the bat, when he, like, cuts his arms off and then Freddy's just like, whatever, you're like, oh. You know, like, what's going to happen that's going to be of any fucking consequence?
Right, and the only thing that you're, like, semi-interested in is which of these characters are going to make it out, but because it's a slasher film, we already know who's going to make it out. So, like, it is, like, very, very low stakes. Yeah, no, alien versus Predator, like, if the Predator and Lex don't defeat that alien and the alien leaves Antarctica, it is fucking ruining the world. Like, that is what the aliens do. It is a dangerous game they're playing. Like,
kind of does so anyway, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like,
there's still a lot higher stakes. So, yeah, yeah, I would edge it towards AVP, and I would say I would just do, like, 10-9.
Yeah. I think 10-9 AVP. That's where I stand as well. Beam, where do you land on this?
I'm 10-9 Freddy versus Jason. I don't know why. Like, I understand that it dragged out more. I understand the memorable moments. Like, yeah, like, I did forget some of those moments even happened. But, I mean, it's more so just that the feeling of, like, them, like, that moment of them with the fire circling around them and they're just, like, facing off. I don't know. That actually, like, it had to me, like, a moment of gravitas to it. Because, like, even still, like you said with the alien, like, I was like, oh, that's interesting that the xenomorph is showing its legs. That, to me, it also took me out of it kind of a little bit where I'm like, this is weird. And it wasn't the battle that I thought it was going to be. Whereas I thought at least it delivered in terms of Freddy versus Jason, where it literally was those two. It was a literal chess match between them the entire time. And you did at least get it where they are doing kind of the face-to-face battle. But again, that's me saying that both of it is just like, whatever.
It's a little bit meh for both.
So the feeling that I was able to leave with on Freddy versus Jason, that's why I'm going to give it a 10-9. Slightly, but, you know, it did it.
Fair enough.
I think I said AVP, but I meant Freddy versus Jason.
You did say AVP, but we can. Yeah. That's fine. Oh, we can change that.
Okay.
Freddy edges out just a teeny bit. And again, it's probably more nostalgic than whatever. But.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, so we are going to take a quick break while we tally up these scores. Then we will be back with the announcement of the winner.
Ladies and gentlemen, after 5 rounds, we go to the judges' scorecards for a decision. The judges scored a contest 48-46, 48-44, and 48-44 for your winner and new champion of the movie about monsters fighting each other, but sort of innocent people get in the middle, Freddy versus Jason!
All right, so there you have it. Freddy versus Jason has taken this contest. It was always going to be this way. It's time for us to get out of here, though.
Yeah.
First of all, we need to thank some people. Andy, thank you so much for showing up.
Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure to have you on. Glad you got to share your passion and love for these movies with us. Yeah. And before we get out of here, do you have anything you want to plug for the listeners out there?
I could plug new Shortwave Radio Band album coming out. It'll be available April 24th on Bandcamp and then streaming everywhere on May 17th. It's an album of all new original music, and we're doing a album release party at No Fun on April 24th, so come out for that. And check out Unsigned 518, available on Metroland Podcast Network, along with this show. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. Tuesday is a full-length episode with a luminary in the 518 music community. And then on Thursday, I do the Weekend Spotlight, which is just like a quick, hey, here's 2 or 3 shows happening and a couple songs from bands that are playing. And that comes out every Thursday, so... yeah, those things. And Metroland. Check out Metroland always, every day. TheMetroland.com.
MetrolandNow.com?
Yeah.
Point of correction.
Yeah, and thank you to
Metroland.com.
Oh,
it is the Metroland.com. Yeah. That's my bad.
The name is Metroland now, but the website is the Metroland. You made me second guess myself.
No, no, you're absolutely right. I was wrong.
And thank you to Metroland for giving us this podcast network, for letting us be on it. Also, thank you again to the Jive Hive for letting us use their studio and for letting us record this podcast here. Why do you got to sneeze while I thank you, Alec? God damn it. He's allergic to- oh, right? My God. It was like it was on per. All right, go ahead. Sorry, Corey.
All good. And finally, more specifically, thank you to Alec Lewis, our audio engineer. Thank you to Nick Baish for his video production on this episode. Thank you for Mikey Baish for additional production supervision. Thank you to the Jive Hive. Thank you to Metroland. Thank you, everybody. If you'd like to check out what is happening with us, you can follow Beam at Beam_O.
Underscore O, I think. I think it's two underscores.
Beam double underscore O on Instagram.
Try one if that's not right.
And you can follow me at Bed_Stuy_Bear on Instagram. We will be posting about what we have coming up next on those channels. And that's about it. We are out of here. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Wait, what's the dog's name, actually? Ernie. Thank you, Ernie, for your production supervision as well. Oh, Nipper behind us.